And I haven't logged in.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town. About to check outside the games. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that home out on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian Williams, Misha, coming to you live every day. We're the number one HR radio show that there is because we bring on really brilliant people every day and we talk to them about what's going on in HR. So we are going to definitely do that today. And Brian and Misha on today. So I would love to introduce, first time on Drive Through HR, Christine McLeod and Pam Ross, welcome to our little drive-through HR house.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So if you would, Christine, we'll have you go first. Introduce yourself to our lovely listeners, and then Pam after that, and then we'll get rolling.
Sounds good. Thanks, everyone. Great to be here. Well, I live in a little town called Squamish, which is between Vancouver and Whistler, where the 2010 Winter Olympics were. So I have an HR consulting practice and really passionate about the world of employee engagement and innovative HR.
And I'm Pam Ross, and I live just outside of Toronto in a great little community called Oakville. And I also have my own consulting and training practice. Right now it's called Pam Ross Consulting, but new name to come, to be announced in the very near future. And I focus on helping organizations improve their workplace culture and their customer experience.
Well, that is fantastic, and I'm a huge fan of anybody Canadian, so I'm a little bit biased in that.
Excellent.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt, does it? Pam, I'm going to start with you. You get the big question first.
Uh-oh.
What is currently, I know, fasten your seatbelts, folks.
All right.
What is currently keeping you up at night around the HR world, HR practice, with your clients? I mean, you pick a lane, and we'll run with it.
Okay, it's hard for me to stick to one lane, but I'm gonna try really hard. So first of all, let me start with why I started my business. After working for 17 years in operations and HR in kind of big national companies, I was starting to feel like I was losing a little bit of my soul every day. And I really, really wanted to work for an organization that I felt really connected to values-wise and felt like I really had a great purpose and it was kind of adding to my overall life. And so I started my business 2 years ago. This week, actually, is when I quit my actual last day of work was 2 years ago this week. So it's been amazing 2 years. And when I started my business, I kind of went, wow, no one should ever have to feel that way. And I feel like there's this disengaged culture and there's a bunch of factors that are causing it. There's sort of these surface factors of economic pressures and people having to do more with less and technology making us connected all the time and competition leading us to work longer hours. And ultimately, people are spending more time at work or connected to work, and they're having less time for family, friends, volunteering, all of those things that, you know, Maslow talked about that take you up into the higher levels of the pyramid. So I think people are looking for those things more in the workplace, and I know I was. And now with my own business, I'm able to bring some of that in. I'm able to be flexible and make time for those things. And I feel like we can do better in the workplace to give our employees that kind of connection at work.
Well, perfect. Oh, well, there you go. You sold me, especially the the losing this a little bit of your soul day by day. I totally. Me and like 300-400 million people probably can identify with that. So good, you're trying to make that a little bit better. Christine, how about you? I'm pretty sure you have a pretty discerning opinion about this. So just a guess.
Well, it's, you know, I joke sometimes that Pam and I are like two sisters who are separated at birth. So I don't know if you know, but Pam and I met on Twitter about 2 years ago. And after some Twitter and LinkedIn and conversations, ended up going into business together. And so there's a reason that we're in business together, because we're quite like-minded in that. And so when I think about what keeps me up at night, this is, it's pretty simple. Within a few percentage points all over the world, somewhere close to 70% of employees are either disengaged or at best apathetic about the work they do. And what the visual that I have in my mind is every single day, millions and millions of people rolling out of bed, putting their feet on the floor, remotely coming close to operating at 100% of their potential. So that keeps me up at night, because I think, gosh, like, these are people who on the weekends are like phenomenal softball, you know, or little league coaches for their kids, and they're amazing grandparents and brothers and sisters. It's not like they're apathetic in all phases of their life. They are just completely, not even remotely, coming close to operating at their potential in the workplace. And so Pam and I have long conversations about why that is. And then the work that we do is largely based around challenging that and believing that, you know, we're just two people, but we have a lot of people in our network. There's a lot of people like yourselves who are challenging the status quo and starting to have different kinds of conversations. So that's what keeps me up at night, a lot of nights.
Well, and I would love to hear, Christine, ask you first, what's something that everybody needs to stop doing, right? Instead of the best practice kind of approach to, you know, here's your starting point, start this, change your life. What's something that everybody can pull the ripcord on and just stop doing it today that is not helping?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a sort of a laundry list of that, but, you know, given that this is an HR show, is it okay, Brian, if I kind of put a bit of an HR hat on that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So there's a couple of things that I think we need as HR professionals to rethink, essentially. And one of them is that we're quite busy doing a whole bunch of stuff. We're doing a lot of stuff that systems and process-wise, we're creating job recs and postings and doing interviews and hiring people. We're doing a lot of stuff. And one of the things that I think we need to all stop doing and press the pause button on is step back and take the 50,000-foot view and go, okay, what's the bigger picture in all of this? So this is not about all the millions of systems and functions that we do in HR. How are we talking about, how do we attract the right talent? So how are we starting with the high level at business and thinking about, gosh, like, how do we attract talent that doesn't even know where we are? And who do we want to position ourselves as a company? And are we really the way that we say we are? And how do we integrate people into our workplace? Instead of talking about, you know, onboarding and filling out forms and all these things, how are we thinking about, gosh, you know, when someone comes into our organization for the first time, what's the experience like from the first touch point all the way through to when they actually are performing at 100%? So one of the things I personally think that we need to do is stop talking about HR as human resources, because I just don't think humans are resources, and talking more about the employee experience. So what is the experience of being an employee from potential candidate all the way through to when they transition into either a promotion in our company or even out of the company? We spend a lot of time talking about customer experience and user experience, and we don't spend a whole bunch of time, enough time, talking about, in my mind, employee experience. So when you start with the experience first, then I find a lot of the busy work ends up going away.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that, for sure. And I, you know what, I agree, could not agree more. Well articulated thoughts. Pam, what about you?
Well, I totally agree with everything that Christine just talked about. And, you know, that whole employee experience, I always say culture is created by actions, not intentions. And it's all of those actions and experiences that people have at every step along the path of their employee experience The other things that I would add is, and you kind of said it at the beginning, Brian, when you talk about best practices, I think we need to stop focusing on best practices and trying to copy people who have best practices and actually create our own. You know, look at your employees, your leadership team, your values personally within your organization and start creating a culture and work around that. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to copy companies like Zappos, and you're never going to be Zappos. You're going to be your company. So figure out what makes you you and what makes you stand out, and that'll appeal to the right people.
Well, that's great. And this is Nisha, and I totally agree with you, Sam. Like, culture is something that needs to be evolved from within by, or not by copying from any other companies. And going back to Christine's point, as you said, employee experience, I just happened to read a fascinating blog from your website that culture is to recruiting as product is to marketing. I totally loved it. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how that culture can be positively impacted when we hire a new employees or when we hire a potential employee?
Absolutely. Do you want me to take that one, Nisha?
Yeah, sure.
Perfect. So one of the things that, as you can probably tell by this point, Pam and I are pretty passionate about culture and starting with that place, and it's quite frustrating because you sort of still have a lot of executives that think, oh, you know, you talk about culture, it's quite fluffy. But Pam and I, well, certainly over the past 2 years, but very much so over the past year, have really tried to create a link between high-performing culture and business results. And so we have a bunch of theory in our heads around that, and we've really set out to figure out, okay, is there a link? Can we prove that when you have a great culture, it actually leads to business results? And part of having that high-performance culture is actually a series of what we would call four principles that lead to really high organizational trust and three competencies that really help an organization become more agile. And those two combinations of organizational trust and agility creates that high performance culture. And once we spend time in all of these different places, and Pam and I are just developing a blueprint right now for that, one of the things that happens is the clearer that you get on who you are and how you operate, guess what? The easier it is for other people to identify with that. So now, just like a brand, you're able to say, oh, I know what these guys are about. I want to be part of that. And so when you become very clear, our first principle is around strategic alignment. So where are you going? How are you going to get there? How is the work that everyone's doing aligned with where you want to go? When you're clear and able to articulate that, now all of a sudden you have talent who's able to say, wow, these guys really know what they're doing or where they're going. I think I can contribute to that. So when you have real clarity around where you're going and how you're going to get there, it helps people identify who are not working with your company, and it also helps people wake up in the morning and understand how the work that they're doing contributes to the organizational success. So that culture piece, when you have that alignment, when sort of people are really focused on kind of a belief that they have individual power to be leaders in the organization, it doesn't matter that they don't have the title of leader on their business card. They feel like they're able to operate as individual leaders. When you have some of these principles in place, people are able to do better work because they know the work that needs to be done.
This is great, though, Christine. And segue to that particular thought, I wanted to get Pam a thought on this particular aspect. Let's just say that there is a company which has a disengaged culture right now, and a new leader is entering to that company. So how can he actually revamp that disengaged culture?
How can they make an impact on that disengaged culture? Is that...
If you are... Yeah. Just suppose if you are a new leader, just recently joined with that company, so how can you revamp that?
So, I mean, for starters, it's really getting in the trenches and understanding what's going on at all levels of the organization. And I think that the more you sort of provide trust and, as a leader, are authentic with your with your teams, the more they will trust you to share the truth and what's really happening and be authentic with you. So, I mean, it's different with every organization, I think, but the blueprint that Christine was talking about, you know, it really starts with building trust. So, you know, starting with your strategic alignment, really building that authentic connection to what you're doing, providing the opportunity for everyone to hold themselves accountable for their work and be individual leaders, and being transparent about what's going on in the organization. And those are sort of the four principles that lead to organizational trust in our model. And that's really the foundation to starting to build that high-performing culture, because, you know, I've seen so many organizations try to build engagement or become more innovative or try the, you know, some great ideas that they got from another company that will drive agility or, you know, help them use technology in new ways. But unless they have that foundation of trust, it's really hard to get past that and build a high-performing culture. So you really have to start with building trust in your organization. So a new leader, you know, it takes time to build trust. The more you can have FaceTime with people, if it's a large company, then FaceTime might be video time. But video, not like a corporate speak video, video like you being yourself and sharing what your thoughts are and asking questions and answering them authentically. Does that help? Does that answer your question?
Yes, fantastic.
Well, and let me do a quick reset, everybody. You are listening to Drive Through HR. We, Brian and Nisha are on with Christine McLeod and Pam Ross. And kind of next question I want to direct actually to Christine. So where exactly would you suggest to practitioners to get their head around and let a starting point to be to developing a more trust culture? Because that is a really, I mean, that's, I couldn't agree more, but sometimes more than not, I guess, that is an overwhelming kind of suggestion and statement, you know, when you're doing all the other stuff you have to do each day.
Totally. And you know what? It's I'm a bit of the school of thought is go looking for the biggest problem and start tackling that one. So there's two schools of thought. There's which is go find the biggest problem area in your organization and start there. That would be one. And then the other would be start with something really small where you can have a quick win. And then once you have the quick win, people are going to say, hey, what are those guys doing in that department? And, you know, how can we replicate that? I'm a little bit of a fan of go where the biggest pain point is. And so especially as HR is trying to make the business case for workplace reinvention or culture reinvention or starting to move to kind of, when we talk about the future of work, a little bit different way of working, if you're going to be making the case to executives, you got to start with somewhere where it's really going to affect, at the end of the line, it's going to affect the bottom line. So great places to start, for example, if you don't have one particular area that's a real disengage pain point, I would start with sales is a really great place to start. I would start with risk management departments. So places where there's a lot at stake. So either from a revenue department, a revenue side of things, or from a cost-saving standpoint. And then I would start going into that department, and I would start poking around. I'd start looking at trends in, you know, results. I'd look at trends in employee engagement scores. I'd maybe do some focus groups or fireside chats. I'd invite people who want to come forward and just say, hey, you know what, we're just in listening mode right now. We're trying to sort of get a handle on where we're at from a, you know, what's working really well with our culture. What's tricky? What are you guys finding that's tricky? What do we need to do differently? And it's really amazing that without going in there with an agenda, the people who truly care about the business will come forward and start giving you feedback. And then the key is, what do you do with it? And that's where having that blueprint for, you know, workplace culture transformation, that helps, because now you've got all this feedback and you're not really sure what to do with it. So let me give you a specific example. There is a, in 2013, the beginning of this year, there's a really, really great white paper, which I recommend everybody reads. It's on this call. It's called The Digital Workplace. And it's a white paper that a company called Infocentric Research out of Europe put out. And they basically found in their research that there's basically $14,000 per employee per year in hidden costs from poor information and gaps in the flow. And so you think about that. What does that actually look like? So in their research, they're looking at stats, and they're coming up with things like in the, all of the companies that they looked at, 70% of customer agents are lacking the information that they need, 70%. 63% of managers are making critical decisions every single week without being fully informed, and I think somewhere around 40% of those decisions are made with the wrong information. And then I think the other one that really blew me away was 50% of information that people need is not searchable. So right from the get-go, if you're looking for a place to start and where why people are not happy at work, it's not because they're asking for anything highly, highly out of the norm. They're asking for things like, do I have the information I need to do a good job when I need it, at my fingertips, in the right format for the customer or for whoever I'm serving? So you don't have to, like, it's not rocket science. This is the kind of stuff that will come out when you spend the time listening to your staff.
Well, that's interesting. And from the points that you mentioned, I feel most of the answers can be given by the managers, right? Not from the HR, I guess, when we talk about the employees that who work in that bottom line. They have a one-on-one interaction with their manager, and all these questions can be answered by him, I guess. So from an engagement perspective, what's your take? I would ask this question to both of you. What's your take or what's your advice to those managers and their role in terms of creating an engagement at the bottom line?
Do you want me to take that first, Christine?
Sure.
All right.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that as managers, it ultimately goes back to those kind of four components of building trust. So again, thinking back to making sure that your team understands how their role contributes to the overall purpose of the organization. So people want to know that they're making an impact. So working with your team collaboratively to realize how much they impact the goals and the objectives of the organization is one thing. Secondly, it is about that authentic humanity piece and, you know, being your best self and your real self at work as a manager. And you know, that might mean a little bit of vulnerability, a little bit of, you know, showing some of your weaknesses and sharing that with your team and getting their help in kind of building up strength across the entire team. So that authenticity from managers makes a huge difference in helping employees relate to you and to their work. And then it's building that individual leadership, you know, treating people like adults. It's at work nowadays, it's not about the time that you put in for most workplaces. It's about getting the results that you're supposed to get and meeting your objectives. So holding people accountable, helping them hold themselves accountable to their own personal objectives, helping them realize how their personal work and reputation impacts the brand and the company. Again, like building that leadership across your team, no matter what level they're at, and sharing information kind of frictionlessly, allowing people to be curious and ask questions and work together and work cross-functionally and not holding that information, you know, tightly to yourself as the manager and thinking that you need to hold all the cards. As a manager, you know, unleash the talent of your team and share that information. You know, there's going to be better ideas that come out, better work that comes as a result of that.
Well, I'll, Sam, I'll ask you first. We'll kind of go, continue on a little bit of the trajectory we're at here. What is something that you, what's a concept or a fad or a term even that you just feel people just need to stop saying it, right? There's some terms out there that drive me into a wall that I think people just should stop using. Because I think they're overused, they've been beaten to death. I think they're so cliche at this point that they're very, you know, there's a negative impact whenever you use it. Like potentially you appear dumber because you actually said it out loud. But is there anything that you really struggle with that kind of makes your skin crawl a little bit that you would say, just don't use that anymore?
For me, it's really anytime you can use a small word or a small sentence and you use a big one, like, stop doing that. Like, and there are, I mean, just say what you mean in real language. No one needs to hear that kind of corporate speak and the, you know, putting a bunch of big words to something doesn't make it sound smarter. So that just drives me absolutely bonkers. Some of the things that I think we need to be careful of, and Christine and I try to do a good job at actually defining these terms when we use them, are, you know, what is engagement? It means so many different things to so many people. I talk to some CEOs and they think that their engagement strategy is having a pajama party at work, and they're done it because that made people happy for the afternoon. So, you know, making sure that you're defining what the terms mean to you rather than just using a term like innovation or engagement or, you know, what is culture. It means so many different things to so many different people. So it's hard to stay away from the words because everyone's using them. But when we use them, define them and what you mean by them, if that helps. That makes sense.
I'm going to jump in with my pet peeve one, which is if I hear one more person talk to me about a seat at the table or HR needing a seat at the table, that's the one that drives me crazy. And my own experience over the past 20 years has been working with really forward-thinking organizations like The Gap and InterWest Resort Group, and I've been really fortunate to be in an environment where I never even heard that term until I started my own business. But why are you complaining about not being at the table? Like, be the table if you need to be. I don't care. But it's there's a lot of, well, if I was just at the table, then I would have more influence. And so that one for me is a real pet peeve because I just think that it really, HR is a profession. There's so many different functions in HR and there's so many different personalities in HR. And so you have everything from like a payroll coordinator or benefits admin assistant to someone who's in a very strategic organizational design or development role. So we have a really, really broad spectrum of what HR is. So to say HR needs to be at the table is not accurate. But at the table or part of your senior team or embedded in the culture of each of your senior leaders should be this real focus on employee experience and employee design and organizational design to basically help the business succeed in its objectives. So that's my personal pet peeve. I've got a whole list, and maybe we'll write a blog post on them, but that would have to be my number one pet peeve.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah, that stupid table. Get it away from us. So we've got about 2.5 minutes left. I wanted to make sure, and Christine, I'll stay with you. Where can folks connect with you? And I know you guys do a lot of research and writing, you and Pam both, and then tell us a little bit about the conference that you all put on together. And by the time we get through all that, we will be out of time. It has been a quick 30 minutes and a great show.
Sounds good. And thank you so much, just on behalf of Pam and I, for having us on the show. And this is just an absolute delight to be here. So if you're interested in continuing this conversation and talking about these, oh my goodness, such radical ideas as reinventing the workplace. The best places that you can connect with us are certainly through social media, both Pam and myself, on Pamela May Ross on Twitter and at Impact Results. That's probably the easiest way. I am going to tweet out in the next couple of minutes, and I'll maybe tag DriveThruHR and maybe Brian and Nisha as well. Pam and I have just launched this past week a series of 10 mini white papers that are totally free. And if you go to impact99.ca, which is our HR summit, the conference that we put on every year, twice a year in Vancouver and Toronto, which is all around reinventing the workplace, if you go to impact99.ca, on the top left, you'll see a little kind of sign up for our ebook series. We promise we won't spam you. This is really, we've put a ton of effort and time into this because we feel passionate about wanting to make a difference. So every week you'll get in your inbox one new principle and competency, and we'll dive into examples of companies that are doing it, tactical tips that you can take in your workplace. And if you're interested, then from there, let's continue the conversation.
Well, that is perfect. I'm a huge fan of everything you guys do. Folks, we're out of time. Christine, Pam, Misha, thank you very much. We're out of here, folks. Have a good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.